This is the Olympic Files. I'm Al.
Are you sure? I'm Theo.
This is, we're recording this on a Friday, if you can't tell. And with us is Eric the Blacksmith, who is going to continue with Phantasms of Freedom Part 4. A lot of good stuff on this one. And as Eric tells us, as a teaser of sorts, it ties into what is happening today. Gee, what a surprise. So anyway, let me just first, you know, good to hear you again, Theo. And we have already heard the work you did with the Lawrence Dennis book and the excerpts that you had told us about that were very, very salient. We are going to hear from you later on about a book that you said is probably 100% beef, no fat, and that is a book entitled Beyond the Dictators. That's correct, isn't it?
One of the 10 or 12 most important books I've ever encountered, and only about 100 pages long. It's, wow.
I mean, I tell you what, you get excited about stuff you like, but I never heard you go into those terms about it. And apparently you have others who feel the same way, because serendipitously, I heard from others who just came upon the book at the same time. I swear to you, that's what happened. And we'll just take that as a coincidence. Not really. But anyway, and Eric, we want to say hey to you again for coming back.
Thanks, Al.
And,
hey, Theo.
You're getting the lady that just dumped on us a couple of days ago, a woman by the name of Andrea.
Yes, we are.
Beating on your windows as we speak.
Yep, I can hear the drips outside, and we're getting lots of rain, but not a whole lot of thunder, lightning, and wind, at least not yet.
That's what we like, but tropical depressions, yes.
Yes, we do.
Just rain on me and leave me alone.
There you go.
All right, folks, also, besides what Theo's going to do with Behind the Dictators, and it is as good as advertised if he said it is, and I hope you enjoyed the two-part series. I mean, it's not over with, but two parts of a series entitled Poetic Perplexities, Emerging Visions of Global Empire, and that's by JQ. I hope you like that, and any feedback, by all means, let us know. So, okay, after all that, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. And, Eric, you're going to kick off exactly what we're going to do with this part four of Phantasms of Freedom.
Sure thing, Al. I wanted to mention that 100 pages, that's proof that good things come in small packages.
Yes. We like 100 pages.
Yes, we do. I've looked at what's been going on lately with the scandals du jour. It seems like every day we're hearing about a new scandal in Washington, and I think there's an awful lot of feints and fakes going on where all the characters are doing their Cirque du Soleil in right field, and over in left field, the real dirt is happening. This thing with Benghazi and a lot of these other shenanigans that have been going on. And in reading some of the anti-federalist papers, I noticed that these people who are sounding the alarm about the Constitution were really onto something. I had mentioned the Confederation, and I go back to my trusty Hologram of Liberty by Kenneth W. Royce, where there's an excerpt from John M. Murren's 1787, The Invention of American Federalism, from Essays on Liberty and Federalism. This was written in 1988. And he goes into why the Confederation lost support. The British Empire collapsed because it tried to meet common British needs by sacrificing American provincial rights. Congress reversed these priorities. It protected local rights so absolutely that it never acquired adequate power to address local needs. I think that folds into what a lot of the Federalists said when they stoked the fear of the people and said, if we don't have a constitution or if we don't jettison the Articles, we're going to have nothing but problems and riots and the sky will fall. Well, the people really weren't buying it. And there is a letter from George Washington to John Jay. This was dated the 1st of August, 1786. And Congress basically got no respect, you know, kind of like the Rodney Dangerfield of the 18th century. And for these nationalists who desired what you could call an energetic central government, this was intolerable. So Mr. Washington, he wrote John Jay a letter. We have probably had too good an opinion of human nature in forming our confederation. Experience has taught us that men will not adopt and carry into execution measures the best calculated, in parentheses, by the nationalists, of course, for their own good, without the intervention of a coercive power. Many are of the opinion that Congress have too frequently made use of the suppliant humble tone of requisition in applications to the states, when they had a right to assert their imperial dignity and command obedience. If you tell the state legislatures they have invaded the prerogatives of the Confederacy, they will laugh in your face. And one could paraphrase here, people refuse to accept what we say is best for them unless we can force them to submit, even though we have, through Congress, de jure power, we're ignored de facto. We're tired of placating these unruly states only to be laughed in our face. The Articles of Confederation created a Congress which had to go begging to the states, hat in hand, and the control mongers were chomping at the bit. Why, in 1785, the Massachusetts congressional delegates had refused to even introduce a resolution calling for a convention. And they said, "More power in Congress has been the cry from all quarters, but especially of those whose views, not being confined to a government that will best promote the happiness of the people, are extended to one that will afford lucrative employments, civil and military. Such a government is an aristocracy which would require a standing army and a numerous train of pensioners and bureaucrats to prop and support its exalted administration." The bottom line is, there were so many voices warning of this Constitution and the trickery that was going on. And the more voices I learn of today, the more shocked I am, I really shouldn't be, that I have heard virtually nothing of them today.
All right. I think all three of us agree that the thing that we find which is most loathsome about the Patriot Idiots and also the Tea Party, and I'm not saying they do this jointly, but they seem to have come to the same erroneous conclusion apart. And we agreed that two things will never happen. One, you can't get your Constitution back because it never was yours. And two, you're not going to get good government by the ballot. Do we have three yeas on that?
Yes.
Yep.
What do you think, Theo?
He said yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just elaborate, if you would, on that.
But you see how...
Going to get a decision in your favor in the federal court. I mean, you mentioned John Jay, the first Supreme Court justice, Chief Justice, and...
Whore.
I wish I could remember the details. It's been a while since I have read it, but if you check out the history of the Supreme Court of the United States by Gustavus Myers, the first two or three chapters lets you know just how thoroughly corrupt John Jay was.
Didn't we do something on it also?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did early on, yeah. And also, I mean, you wrote to me, Eric. I don't know if Theo got this or not. I think he did. But we were wondering out loud about Scalia's piling on to what was that about necessarily? Where did he pile on with the right to grab DNA without a warrant? Is that correct?
Oh, yes.
But the reason I bring it up is because you're scratching your head, and he's, you know, the point is we have to remember, and this is where this stems from what you were doing, Theo, with Myers. A take on John Jay, and that's why we did that early on, and that is these justices are also whores. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they're given their script to play. You got the five bad guys and the four good guys, and they go back and forth, and they change around a little bit. And, I mean, who gives a crap? Who puts them on the court? They're supposed to act as liberals. The others are supposed to act as conservatives. But, I mean, and I don't know, if you guys disagree, by all means, I mean, I don't want to do this in a vacuum, but it would seem to me that just like the political parties play their part, good guy, bad guy, the justices do the same thing, and they come out with decisions that are like sometimes, most times, head-scratchers. Anybody want to grab that?
I'll jump at it. I think not only are these judges on the take, they're so intertwined with financial interests. I've heard that DNA can be sampled and formulated and patented and used for medication and used for other biological applications.
But let me ask you this. In other words, you can set somebody up through DNA.
Yes.
You could take somebody else's DNA and plop it somewhere else, supposedly, and say, oh, look, he was involved in this crime.
Fingerprints are a sort of one-dimensional aspect.
But they're probably the best, aren't they?
Yes. My impression is that they're a lot harder to fake.
Right.
DNA can be planted. It can be altered. It can be corrupted. And there are a thousand ways this can be abused.
It can be replicated.
If it can be
synthetically replicated, then anybody can do anything at any time. You can put anybody at any place at any time.
My thought is, who's to say that these judges, I certainly wouldn't put it past them, don't have stock in some company or some corporation that's dealing with DNA replication and propagation.
And by the way, you treat them most highly. They're not judges. They're justices, and most of them didn't sit on a bench at all.
And none of them were just successful attorneys or anything like that. They were all representing powerful corporations. Unless you were an attorney for a powerful corporation, you will never, ever get chosen for a Supreme Court seat.
I do recall what the informer said about judges. They were lawyers who couldn't make it on the outside, so they became a judge.
Yeah, and he also said that they are a private corporation, and they cannot be held liable for any decisions they make. You cannot touch them. It's like an island away from everything. And at least they're judges. These other characters, it's like, where the heck did you get these guys? What tree did you shake these cats out of? Jeez. At any rate, so...
There is an excerpt that talks about the power that the Constitution gave the courts and how little there was to regulate the formation and the, I don't know, what's a good word to describe this, the continuation of the courts. And I have an excerpt, I can't find it right here and now, but it talks about just how much power the Constitution gave the judiciary.
Yeah.
It basically wrote them a blank check.
It did. Yeah, you did. I mean, you had the private corporation who created the private corporation called judges, federal judges, and you can't touch them. It is impossible to touch them. And again, like I said, like you threatened to do that, audio that talks about them. They work apart. You can't touch them once they get there.
And they make it up as they go along, too.
Yes, that's true, too, which is why, Theo, is it not true that we said, you know, some people can bust the move and become a sovereign citizen and get out of everything, and for whatever reason it works, and that's great. But there's no, you never know who you're going to go before, and at any given day you can turn around and say, we're not doing that anymore. We're doing this today, and you're done.
The most, probably the most vaunted, legendary Supreme Court justice of all time, John Marshall, when he was ruling a case about contracts that didn't serve his interests, then a contract was a contract. It could not be broken, could not be violated. But when he was himself stealing land, involved in land fraud, land theft, and suddenly contracts were malleable. That's also covered factually by Gustavus Myers in that book.
Well, if any of you have lawyer friends that will really talk like real to you, their mantra is contracts, they're made to be broken. So forget it.
I've had a lawyer friend tell me that.
Yeah.
Usually when copious amounts of alcohol are flowing, but yes.
Yes, they do talk, don't they? And Eric the Blacksmith plies them with alcohol to get the truth. Attaboy.
Yeah. I like to pay the tab. It's amazing what one can find out.
Okay, and so where are we going from here?
Okay, well, I wanted to mention that I found a book, and I mentioned this the last time, Al, when Theo was on assignment. I found a book. It's called An Economic Interpretation of the Constitution of the United States,
It
was written by Charles A. Beard.
Chucky Beard, yep.
Who was vilified when he came out with this book, even to the point where the good President Taft assembled or at least spoke to a whole passel of lawyers in a Waldorf Astoria shindig.
All right, enter hisses and boos.
Yes, enter lots of hisses and boos.
So they were at the Waldy Astoria.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Taft just banged on this guy for writing this book, and there was an article in the Ohio Star that I did mention last time about how these vultures were desecrating the graves of the patriots we revere. And there's a great passage in here that really gets to the heart of the matter. And this is from page 16 of this book. Suppose it could be shown that from the classification of the men who supported and opposed the Constitution, that there was no line of property division at all. That is, that men owning substantially the same amounts of the same kinds of property were equally divided on the matter of adoption or rejection. It would then become apparent that the Constitution had no ascertainable relation to economic groups or classes, but was the product of some abstract causes remote from the chief business of life, gaining a livelihood. Suppose, on the other hand, that substantially all of the merchants, moneylenders, security holders, manufacturers, shippers, capitalists, and financiers, and their professional associates are to be found on one side in support of the Constitution, and that substantially all or the major portion of the opposition came from the non-slaveholding farmers and the debtors, would it not be pretty conclusively demonstrated that our fundamental law was not the product of an abstraction known as, quote, the whole people, unquote, but of a group of economic interests which must have expected beneficial results from its adoption? Obviously, all the facts here desired cannot be discovered, but the data presented in the following chapters bear out the latter hypothesis, and thus a reasonable presumption in favor of the theory is created. More to the statement that it is indeed all about the Benjamins.
Well, in the end, I mean, that really does come down to it. I mean, there's nothing else except that.
That's correct. And I was exchanging some emails with a couple of friends at work, and, you know, I got some more of the Killer Raghead for Christ emails.
Oh, no.
And, yes, I sent them back statements about the informer and that, you know, you're not going to vote in good government and all this. And I got a classic back from one of my buddies. And it was in bold letters like he was shouting at me.
Oh, no. Was there underlining italics and exclamation points?
No, actually not this time. It was just, well, I think, let me see. Was
okay, then he's just mad. He's just mad. He's not mentally ill. Because when you get the other stuff, they're mentally ill.
Yeah, this was just in all bold caps. It was bolded caps. What would Ronald Reagan do? Question mark.
Well,
I know one thing he would do.
And that
is that, Theo?
Whatever Rome wanted him to do.
But the other thing is, Ronnie couldn't remember that he did it. Ronnie was not home, man. During those 8 years, Ronnie was not home.
No, well, after Bush Sr. tried to have him taken out, I think he was basically drooling in a cup and reading from cue cards wherever he went.
Can I share an anecdote?
Sure.
Because it's my show, or it's our show, Theo, and I'll get pissed off if I can't. Theo, you may remember this, when Harry and I were talking about Ronnie, and I used to, you know, before I met Harry and before I was thinking the way I was, if you guys remember this at all, Ronnie would go out sometimes and give a speech, and you could see Meese and the boys behind him just wanting to cringe and go under a rock because that's not the speech they gave him, and they were going to have to do a lot of damage control. Are we okay on that premise?
Oh, yeah.
All right. And so one of the ones that he apparently did was with the speech about tear down this wall. They gave Ronnie his speech. And the reason why he could do this is because he knew they tried to kill his ass, and they failed, and they couldn't try again. You got it? So he was absolutely indemnified from any other attempts on his life for 8 years. Why? Because he was electable, and Daddy Bush wasn't. So anyway, when he went up there, they gave him the speech, and Ronnie goes, "No, I got my own," and he pulls it out of his pocket because he knows they couldn't do a thing about it except just hiss and froth and shit in their pants and all this other stuff. And so Ronnie, look, do we think this guy would be a great guy to sit in, you know, like on a train with? Absolutely. Was he a good guy? Absolutely. Did he know what he was doing in office? No. Reaganomics? Somebody tell him what it was. Come on. You know, the guy was gone. But I had a laugh because at least we can give him this much. He knew they couldn't kill him again. And he went out there once in a while and just said, no, guys, it goes like this. He gave his own speech.
He never lost his wit. I mean, people say that Bill Clinton was this great communicator. As far as I could see, Ronald Reagan ran rings around Clinton when it came to that. But
yeah, I would have to say that the propaganda machine behind him, because if you, you know, Theo, again, you know, 1980, I don't know how, you know, much you were paying attention, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, younger than we. But I had a laugh because everything that Ronnie did when they did commercials, they showed these, like, gigantic maps. I mean, not maps, but gigantic flags, American flags that, like, were the size of Rhode Island. And these, like, sunbeams that were coming through the clouds over barns and everything. And we're like, so what are you trying to tell me, that Ronnie created this? But you know what I'm saying? They affixed him to apple pie, baseball games, big
yeah.
flags, farmland, you know? And it's like, no. So...
And he was the guy that undid the century-plus-old...
curse. Tecumseh curse.
the diplomatic, not a curse, but the banning of any diplomacy, any representation with Rome. Ronnie undid that. It was in 1867 or 1868, one of those 2 years. As you know, it was... so obvious to the government of the U.S. that Rome was involved in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln that we severed diplomatic ties with the Vatican over it.
The diplomatic Vatican. Ties?
Yeah.
Yes, that's key to remember. They said it was diplomatic ties. Yes, Eric.
Yeah, yeah, they severed them for over a century. In 1980, either 1980 or 1984, Ronald Reagan undid that, and he has reestablished them. And... in 1980, as I think part of that program, Ronald Reagan was the first president to take the oath of office while facing the great phallic symbol in D.C.
No, the
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Tecumseh curse he also beat, where presidents elected in 0 years wind up assassinated. Kennedy.
The Tecumseh curse I had heard of.
Yeah, he beat the Tecumseh curse because he had already been attempted, and it didn't work. You know, when he got shot, what, it was in March? I mean, my goodness, he was in office 2 years, and they popped him. So, yeah, so that's interesting. But, I mean, you know, Ronnie knew what the deal was. I thought it was interesting also because Nancy would not get involved in any Republican situations, you know, dances, balls, whatever, after Ronnie... let's see, I think after Ronnie died. And she finally relented at the very, very end. But I always thought that the reason why she wanted nothing to do with the Bushes and stuff was because she actually knew who tried to kill him. You know, I mean, Hinckley, give me a break, you know. So.
Yeah, a friend of the family.
Yeah, really, the son of a friend of the family. Oh, it just gets so much better. But anyway, be as it may about Ronnie, and, you know, people attribute all this great stuff to him. You know, Ronnie didn't know. You know, I'm not blaming it on Ronnie, but Ronnie didn't know. So.
He did some other dirty things, too. Some of it's, I think, covered in Joan Mellon's book. When he was governor of California, Garrison was trying to extradite somebody that he desperately needed in his trial, and Ronnie would not allow that extradition from California. I remember reading that.
Hey, look, he served other masters, too. And
yeah.
I mean, everyone wants to, you know, but the only thing I resent, really, is when they call Reaganomics, because it's like Ronnie didn't even know what Reaganomics were. All right, stop. All right, Eric, sorry for that digression, but by all means, continue.
Well, it leads me into something kind of neat, because I noticed that if you look at the magazines, you look at the newspaper articles, there's so many people in these high political positions that are called Christians, like George Bush. Is he too Christian to be president? Ronald Reagan, you know, Newt Gingrich, all these people. And there are those who would say that, well, the Constitution was inspired by God. Well, those who believe that might be surprised to learn that the Federal Convention was not opened with prayer in May of 1787. Now, in June, Benjy Franklin suggested that the small progress over the previous 5 weeks was directly attributed to Such and moved that the remaining sessions open with daily prayer. And Hamilton, he practically crapped his drawers. You know, he said calling in outside clergy would lead the public to suspect embarrassments and dissension within the convention. And this is great, that, and leave it to Hamilton to come up with a line like this. He had opposed prayer on the grounds that the convention was not in need of foreign aid.
Really?
Leave it to Hamilton. Yep. Now, Williamson, he said we don't need a clergyman and we don't have the funds for one anyway. And Franklin's proposal, really, there was nothing acted on. And I think it was three or four persons out of 55 thought prayers necessary. The rest of them, they really didn't give a rat's keister. So the convention was never led in daily prayer.
Don't tell Eric John Phelps that.
Wherever he is.
What's with Eric John Phelps?
We don't know. We don't care. No, you know, another good guy that went bad. I mean, you know, what can you say?
Well, doesn't he put Washington up on a pedestal?
Of course, that's why we don't care about him anymore. Yeah. No, I mean, he wants to go through everything that we go through, but he wants to believe that this actually was a Christian nation and had a start like that. And he holds, I mean, I already had this conversation with him. It's like, Eric, it comes down to, you know, your information versus my information. But in the end, no matter what you tell me about these platitudes that there's no end to that supposedly came out of these characters' mouths, the point is, what were their actions like? Thank you. You know, I mean, the Constitution, how many signers were slavers? We went through this before. Slavers, they were miscegenists, they were profligates, they
land
were bankers.
Land frauders.
Yeah, there you go. I mean,
speculators.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, what president isn't a Christian when he needs the votes? I mean, Billy taking a Bible with him to whatever Baptist church he went. Give me a break, will you?
Well, it's like what Carlin said about the flag, the Bible, and children.
Yeah. They beat you with it.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's a joke, and that's what gives Christianity a bad name amongst everything else, so that everybody has a convenient excuse like not to believe in God, or even that he's, you know, removed from all this. But it's the same thing that happens everywhere. And that is, for the most part, you have delusion, that's number one, and it just, you know, it just embraces and surrounds and swallows, what, like 99% of the people? Why is it that so many are willing to go down that road? And it happens in every single organization. And unfortunately, I don't know, Theo, wouldn't you say the same thing? I mean, Christianity is like it's like a bad word now. And I really flee it.
Yeah, actually, Lawrence Dennis had quite a bit to write about that. You know, he grew up a child evangelist. He would know.
Oh, gee, I know. Great.
Now, he did not besmirch Christianity. He just pointed out that whenever you link it with government or politicians, then it's not Christianity anymore. It's
something else. Yeah, but, I mean, that's what always happens, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, every
yeah.
time we get around to it, it's the same old stuff. You know, just say, I mean, the Republicans are the worst because, you know, it's GOP stands for God's Own Party, if anybody was wondering. And it's like, yeah,
I thought
okay.
it stood for Gathering of Puppets, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah Palin, a good Christian. Are you kidding me? Are you serious? Honestly, come on. Anyway, you know, you believe what you want to believe, and that's what we're dealing with. And that's why it's so hard to do stuff like this, because what, like maybe 10 out of every, like, 10,000 people will listen to it and understand it's the truth. It's not pleasant. It's not pleasant for us. But, I mean, do you want to know the truth? And the answer is, no, not really. And so here
one
we
thing
are.
That really cracked me up about Sarah Palin, well, there were a number
many
of things that
yes.
cracked me up about Sarah Palin. I have to admit she's rather nice to look at.
She's a slut.
There was some kind of grassroots event where she was giving a speech, and if you wanted to attend that grassroots Tea Party event that was for the little people, you would have to pony up $550.
Was she wearing
wow,
a bikini?
Wow, that's really grassroots, isn't it?
Was she wearing a bikini?
I don't know. For that price, she better had worn one.
I would say so, yes.
One.
I mean, she's like a little trained chimp. they put a little uniform on her and they give his, you know, her a little, like, you know, that clipboard she walks around with. She can't talk on her own. We saw that with the famous Barbara Walters interview. Did you see that, Theo?
What's that?
Theo was in a bathroom. No, I mean, did you ever see the exchange between, no, it wasn't Barbara Walters. It was Katie CIA Couric.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
Talking to Sarah and going like, well, what magazines do you read?
Yeah.
I read them all. Well, what
totally
would they be? Well, you know, all of them. I mean, Sarah Palin's like, duh. What does a vanity plate read? DOH. Anyway.
There were some real high strangeness involving her kids, like, I can't remember, Track or the supposedly the Down syndrome kid she had, and there was just some real, real strange stuff going on with that.
Well, check this
her
out.
Her husband, I mean, just the whole thing with the town up in Alaska, just some real strange stuff.
First of all, Alaska is strange stuff, so if you're there, what do you expect? But, I mean, did you see the thing where she was a sports broadcaster? And she did sports up in Alaska on a, you know, some network channel, and she was covering like some kind of like, you know, the Great Alaska Shootout basketball thing, and she was supposed to interview an NBA player he was an NBA player then, but was going to be, and she wound up boning him in her sister's dorm room. That's how much of an alley cat she is. So it's like, you know, Sarah, you're supposed to cover it, not do it. You didn't hear this?
No.
No, and the basketball player, when approached, said, yeah, you know, it happened. And he's a Negro. That's all right. So I had a laugh. It's like, yeah, Sarah, right? Sarah's straight and tall. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's the best. And I liked it when she had a little photo taken of her with a leather miniskirt with her hair pulled up and, you know, in battle mode and with a wine glass, you know, in between her, like, middle fingers. And what is that supposed to be, Sarah? Is that like, you know, you going to communion? Oh, God. It's so pathetic, isn't it?
I mean, they were calling her Caribou Barbie.
Oh, God.
Other things.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so we just, you know, we just like dumped all over her. So where are we at now?
Well, I wanted to mention this bill in Connecticut that I talked about last time.
Right.
That they ramrodded it through. Well, there were some more tricks and stunts up in Hartford. The state of Connecticut just passed a law that would give illegal immigrants driver's licenses. The law doesn't take effect until January 1st of 1915. Okay, Eric, you'll be okay. Of 2015. And one of the Dems, don't know who, governor denied it, snuck a provision in the bill that upped the date to this July 1st. It was caught by one of the Republican lawyers. The governor denied it. Everybody denied it, and it was caught just in time. But what's up with giving illegal immigrants driver's licenses?
Well, we've already gone through this down here. And when Jeb Bush was president, well, yep, there's a slip for you. When Bush was governor, his statement was, well, look, they're here. Why don't we do it? And that's the logic that's, you know, everywhere. And as Theo knows, too, and, you know, this is another whole thing. This was a forced immigration to do something. And, of course, every time I mention the Camp of the Saints, you know, everybody calls me a racist. I mean, I'm not buying it. I mean, I'm not with the whole ethos of that book. But the point is clear. What we've seen is third worlders forced out of their countries to go ahead and, if I use this word, everybody gets PO'd, but that's fine, to mongrelize prosperous, traditionally, and let's face it, Western European and North American countries. So what's the point? The point is to tear them down. Now, is that, I mean, they're leaving their countries not because things are good. So you can't blame, I mean, you can't blame those who come. The point is that why are they coming? Why are things so bad from where they came that they wanted to do this, if you know what I'm saying? So what that would mean is, globally, second and third world countries are being kept down to induce this forced immigration, which only makes sense for survival for those who are doing it. So, you know, I'm not mad at them. But the point is that it's like, you know, nobody wants to be forced into something to make room for somebody in a lifeboat where there's not a whole lot of room left. You know, it's like, well, you know, you got your own lifeboat. Why are you here? You know, and I mean, I know that's being simplistic, but the thing is, look, if you overload anything, it's going to go down. And that's pretty much what's happening here and in Western Europe as well. So there's this big outrage about all this kind of influx, but it's planned, you know, and that's the way it is.
I had a thought about this, and I wonder if there wasn't something, really something, to what the informer said. Of course, we know there was, about non-resident aliens.
Okay.
Here are these illegal aliens come into this country, and they're non-resident aliens. Could this plan to give these guys and gals licenses rope them into the system so they're now residents instead of non-resident aliens, and they're, like, locked in with the whole bank card theory?
I'll say yes, but, I mean, Theo, you got any thoughts about this?
Well, yeah, you can start taxing them then.
That's right. And you can also draft them to fight. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like, I mean, I'm jaded to the point where it's like, yeah, let them all come in because you know what? You're going to go into the service. You know, and also, if I think what's going to happen is going to happen, you can all have this country because there's not going to be left of it that, you know, anything left of it that doesn't look like toast. Yeah, so, Eric, the answer is yes, to bring them into the system.
One thing, and why are we getting so excited about 250,000 jobs?
Well, haven't we been down this road before? Yes. Absolutely. All right, okay. Can we talk about economics for a second?
Sure.
All right. First of all, I had a laugh because, I mean, I think I already covered this, but watching CBS Morning Show when they had their, like, you know, financial talking head female-type person come out and said, well, you know, the economy really can't get good. I mean, they love the Dow's, like, had the great Tuesdays for, like, how many in a row, 20, 22, whatever. But it's like, well, you know, we have to get rid of that. And here's what I had to laugh. She looks in the camera and says, we have to get rid of that 11.7 unemployment, 11.7 million. And I'm like, huh? There's 11.7 million people unemployed in Florida alone. Don't give me that. Then the next thing they said was, well, what's driving the economy? Well, home buyers. Okay. Why are they coming out of the woodwork now? Because the unemployment is still bad. The employment situation is not good. Well, it's because whoever's got jobs now feels secure, and they're going to buy. And I'm like, do you really believe that? And then I'm thinking, okay, so when all that's done with, when all those who have been bought originally buy, what do we do then? I mean, come on. This economy's driven by homeowners. Didn't we do this, like, back in 2005? You know what I mean? I mean, it's ridiculous what they come up with, and they play these shadow games. You know, and Theo, I don't know if you remember this at all, but in the old days, I mean, Harry was a big student of Barron's, that financial periodical.
Yeah.
And he came into me one day in the library and said to me, I don't believe this happened. And we're talking like 04, 03 or 04. Barron's reflected what the government stopped doing, and that is printing the M3 money supply. You know what I mean? Which is all the money in circulation. Why? Because it was ridiculous. Now, that was what? We can say that conservatively, that was 9 years ago. Can you imagine where we are now? Can you imagine how many promissory greenbacks are out there? You know what I mean? So it's like, who are you kidding? And people who are going to go out there and buy houses now with inflated real estate prices because they're trying to jack them up? Oh, and let me share one other thing, that which I would have shared with Trudeau or Bob Chapman in the old days. My wife and I ride our bikes in a development in which we once lived. We go there about once a month. Last month we went through driving the whole place. I mean, riding the whole place. And we saw a whole bunch of for rents and a whole bunch of for sales going up. And we're thinking, okay, so what does this mean? Real estate's up. It's a great time to buy. Because what always cracks me up, and you guys probably understand this too, when they tell people in the media, I mean, the media tells people it's a great time for buyers, what are you telling the sellers? I ain't buying. You know what I mean? Oh, it's a great time for sellers? Well, I ain't buying. That's all the way it goes. I mean, you know, I'm not going to go buy. I'm going to wait for it, you know, to come back down. But here's the point. A month ago, we saw all the stuff crap up. We went today, and we saw where there were none before, five foreclosures, and for sales and rents all over the joint. We looked at a property today, and we talked to a realtor who actually was, like, real about it, and I'm going, real estate's popped up. I'm going, the inventory is out everybody's ears. Who are they kidding? And he said, yeah, you're right. The media is talking in Florida especially. Oh, things are great, so they can everybody can jack up their prices, but it's not happening. So, all right, this is a long, long story, but this is like something that's organic and happening today, and that is they are talking up real estate again like they did how many years ago as the big save-all for the economy. Where the hell is that going to put us again? So anybody want to
feel good question. Well, even back in the time of the colonials, they were talking up real estate with land speculation. And how Hamilton played these Revolutionary War veterans like a cheap violin. And like the excerpt I read last time.
Well,
it was amazing.
Myriad ways of robbing poor guys like that. And George Washington and Alex Hamilton, those were a couple of the guys doing it.
Yes. And I think about this, these scandals today about the Facebook and email and all the surveillance that's going on. And people are acting surprised like this is happening. I mean, come on, boys and girls. I mean, you should have known this was going to happen. Well, there was an anti-federalist who I believe addressed this in so many words. And this was from Sentinel's Letter 4. And this is paragraph 6 and 7.
All right. This is an anti-federalist paper, right?
This is anti-federalist, yes,
okay,
from Sentinel.
Okay.
It is to be lamented that the interested in designing have availed themselves so successfully of the present crisis and under the specious pretense of having discovered a panacea for all the ills of the people. They are about establishing a system of government that will prove more destructive to them than the wooden horse filled with soldiers did in ancient times to the city of Troy. This horse was introduced by their hostile enemy, the Grecians, by a prostitution of the sacred rites of their religion. In like manner, my fellow citizens are aspiring despots among yourselves, prostituting the name of a Washington to cloak their designs upon your liberties. I would ask, how is the proposed government to shower down those treasures upon every class of citizens, as is so industriously inculcated and so fondly believed? Is it by the addition of numerous and expensive establishments? Is it by the doubling our judiciaries, instituting federal courts in every county of every state? Is it by a superb presidential court? Is it by a large standing army? Is it by putting it in the power of the future government to levy money at pleasure and placing this government so independent of the people as to enable the administration to gratify every corrupt passion of the mind to riot on your spoils without check or control? In that statement, I think he addresses so many of the future ills that took place. Homeland security, terrorism. If you look at the 1828 edition of the Webster's Dictionary, one of the definitions of terrorism is government's action against its own people to inculcate fear and control.
I thought that was the definition of terrorism in the past, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. That's correct, Theo.
In my 72 Webster's, it's still predominantly the state against its people. But as I had mentioned, and when I looked in the library back in those days, I looked at the dictionaries from 2000 onward, and it went, and the whole definition of terrorism, well, not the whole, but the major meanings up front were terrorism was people against the state. So
yeah,
they reversed it.
Reversed it.
But
Trotsky, he defined it. Did he not define it as government attacking its own people? I thought Trotsky did that as well.
Well, when I talked about that book that I read a long time ago, and I'm sorry I can't remember it, and I don't know who's got it. Maybe you do. Do you have that? The book, was it Communism and Terrorism or Terrorism and Communism, whatever?
I did not get that one from you, no.
Somebody's got that somewhere. So anyway, as I divvied up my library. No, but I mean, that's what Trotsky was saying. I mean, just work this thing, baby. And what's also interesting was he talked about universal, not military, but you know how I'm talking about that legislation that was around the Universal National Service Act?
Oh, yeah. They called it everything except for the word draft.
Well, they took military out, and they used Universal National Service Act. It used to be Universal Military. Yeah, okay. So they yanked that out when it came out. In 2003, it came out with the military in it. 2005, they yanked military out and made it Universal National Service Act. But what I had to laugh at was that in that book by Trotsky, which is supposed to be an answer, he leveled at, you know, I mean, Trotsky and these Russians, like, never did anything that wasn't, like, 700 pages. I mean, every time I look at, like, you know, War and Peace, it's like, can you guys not distill this down a little bit?
So they had to kill time during those long winters.
Oh, boy, is that ever evident. Yeah, absolutely.
Boy, they were long, all right.
Woo. So in that book, you know, Terrorism and Communism, whatever, it talked about having these, like, you know, labor armies, and I swear that's what's going to happen here with a combination of supposed voluntarism in, like, what was it? What is someone's? I forgot. I was all over this back in the old grassy knoll days about having, like, this service corps or whatever that Obama was pushing. I mean, because they just gave it to him to do that. But I'm looking at all these, like, volunteering type organizations where it won't be volunteering any longer, where it's going to be basically back to the FDR with the, you know, CCC and all that, WPA, where you're going to go out and basically just do something for the government because you love your world and all that other stuff. So, I mean, it's coming around again without any doubt.
The high schools today are a perfect example of that. You have to give so many hours to get your diploma of the volunteer work,
I mean,
quote unquote.
We all understand that community service is a good thing. Did we do enough of it when we were young? No, we didn't. All right. But be that as it may, when you mandate it, it's not voluntary anymore. Okay. So let's just get that straight. Don't talk about volunteering if you mandate it. All right.
Exactly.
It's an oxymoron. It can't have it the same space. But that's what we're seeing time and time again. Redefinitions of everything. And I don't mean to make it sound like it's hopeless, but it means like we're getting a job done on us. And I think it's pretty clear that. All right, you ready for the all-time all-timer? All right, well, you better be.
Yeah.
I'm watching, I don't know, you guys have it probably in your own, wherever you are. I mean, whether it's on the left coast or the right coast, and down here in the penis of America, which is Florida, we had to see. You laugh at that. Well, take a look at the damn map.
Well, I know.
All right.
Yes, it looks like a certain part.
Yes, it does. And everything drains out to this place, every single piece of crap that every – well, never mind. That's why Trudeau and I do America 3D. Anyway, they had the CW, and I think you guys probably have it wherever you are. It's an independent station. You know, that. You know, it's not your network thing. Anyway, if you don't have it, okay, fine. But we do. And they have, like, the socially acceptable trio – as you're looking at the screen, left, kind of like Caucasian male. In the middle, you have the blonde, blue-eyed, heavily lip-glossed chick in the middle. And on the right, you have the light-skinned Negro with about 2 days' growth because it's like hip. You know, we're still doing the 85, like, you know, I don't shave all the way. And I hit this channel by mistake this morning. And I never should do this stuff in the morning because it just ruins my day. And here is this bubblehead explaining the reason why it's just to have Verizon and Prism and whatever other companies did this share cell phone records. Well, it's because it already stopped a terror event. And it's like, how do you know that? Because I trust my government. And your government can never be bad. Right, Goldilocks? Oh, no. And what I had to laugh at is she's explaining this. It's like, look, first of all, just do the news. Don't explain it to me. All right, and I'm watching this while I'm still standing up with the remote because I'm not going to stay here any longer. Then the light-skinned Negro says, well, that's why we have the system, because it works. All right, and at that point, I ran for the sink. Why? Because I was going to blow chow. I mean,
can you trust us. We're not going to No, we're not going to throw the Articles of Confederation overboard.
But, you know, I mean, everything's okay. It's all for our good. And I keep thinking of you sometimes, Theo, when the stuff we talked about with 1984, which I saw on TV the other day.
Yeah.
William Hurt?
Yeah, they actually, the casting was great. They picked the perfect actor to play Winston Smith.
I'll tell you what, I had told Lady Viz, this is worth watching because it's about one of the most, what would you say, authentic replications of that book in film.
And somehow they didn't tweak the ending to make it be a pro-America like the previous renditions of both 1984 and Animal Farm did, because the CIA bought the film rights to those books. I know they bought the film rights to Animal Farm, and it was E. Howard Hunt who played the major role in that.
All right, and with that, let me stop you right there. We're going to go into part two. We'll pick it up on the other side.